they'll do anything. Fill their bodies with poison things just to feel good. Everything I learned be so hard. Can't you see I'm giving up? I don't know where you are. Where are you? All when black clouds come over me, they darken my skies. If it's how I look at things, to give me new eyes.
Do you or someone you know suffer from addiction? While many of us have an addiction to something, we have few places to turn to get the help we need. Welcome to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. Learning about addiction and that you are not alone is the first step in getting things back on track. Our show will bring you to that first step and much more. Now, here is Rebecca Bullion.
Hello, I'm Rebecca Bullion, and you are listening to Addiction in America on Voice America Internet Talk Radio. I am so excited. This is our first show. And during the course of the next 15 weeks, we're going to be talking about a lot of things. Lots of information, lots of good guests. One of the things we're going to be talking about is, of course, substance abuse, alcohol, cocaine, meth. What's going on with synthetic drugs like bath salts? Some of the things you've heard in the news are pretty crazy. We'll be looking at that. We're going to be looking at the brain chemistry of addiction, what's going on with family systems and the dynamics of the addicted family, so to speak, and codependency and enabling. We'll be talking about intervention, dual diagnosis, eating disorders, and, of course, spirituality, recovery, and the spiritual roots of addiction. Some of the speakers that we're going to have, next week we're going to have Burr Cook of Family Intervention Now, and we're going to talk about do's and don'ts of intervention and just looking at the whole picture, things to consider. November the 6th, we're going to have Dr. Ralph Carson of Pine Grove to talk about his new book, The Brain Fix, that came out this year, and that's The Brain Fix, What's the Matter with Your Gray Matter? How to Improve Your Memory, Moods, and Mind. On November 13th, we're going to have Dr. Kathy Rito, who is director of the Women's Program at Pine Grove, to talk about dual diagnosis of substance abuse and eating disorders. And then on the 20th of November, Dr. John Caldwell of the Meadows, he is going to talk about a topic that I'm very interested in as a therapist, and that is attachment and relationship trauma and how these can fuel addictions, how those early developmental relationships are so important to us. Then in December, we're going to have Dr. C.C. Knuckles to talk about the street drug issue, as well as his new book, The Egoless Self, which is a spirituality and recovery book. So other people that we'll have on will talk about media addiction, sexual addiction, and I encourage you to listen in and to call in. The first question that I want to entertain in our show today, which is entitled Addiction and Intervention 101, is what is addiction? What exactly is it? It's got a broad definition because there are many symptoms to it, and we have to look at the whole picture. But Webster says that it's a continued use of a substance despite adverse consequences, as well as uncontrollable use. Webster's also refers to addiction as, I like this one, enthusiastic devotion, a strong inclination, frequent indulgence, or being strongly disposed to a chemical or a process. Well, there is chemical abuse that we have to consider, but there's also process addiction. Process addictions we think of as being sexual addiction, gambling addiction, and they're a little bit different, but than chemical addiction. But you know, we'll look into that. With chemical addiction, the body has to incorporate that substance into its normal functioning, and when that happens, the person, we consider them to be chemically addicted, and the phenomena of tolerance and withdrawal happens when the substance is removed. And with chemical addiction, we think of this as possibly being life-threatening. When a person has a process addiction, there is also a withdrawal but it's more of a mood-related thing. And they're getting addicted to their own chemicals, their serotonin lift that they're getting from that process. So when does a person cross the line from substance abuse or mild process addiction into full-on addiction? One thing that we talk about in the substance abuse field is we can, as outsiders, diagnose someone, but it doesn't really matter unless they diagnose themselves, because they have to get out of denial, which is the first symptom of having a substance abuse problem or a process addiction. But I'm taking some symptoms from the DSM, the Diagnostic Manual of Mental Disorders, just so you will have a rundown of the whole picture. First is, as I mentioned, tolerance and withdrawal. Next, we have increased amounts of the substance being used, combined with unsuccessful attempts to cut down or control your use, a lot of time spent to obtain the substance or recovering from its effects. Important social, work-related, or recreational activities are given up or reduced due to the addiction. And then lastly, the substance is continued despite knowledge of persistent and recurrent physical or psychological consequences. That's where denial really comes in. Again, the difference between chemical addiction and the process addictions is that the person will go through withdrawal when the substance is removed, and this can be life-threatening, especially with late-stage alcoholism. Seizures are a risk, and with benzodiazepines, there's a risk of heart attack. So those are some of the outward signs that we can look at. When I'm doing alcohol and drug assessments in my practice, one of the tools that I like to use is the Michigan Alcohol Screening Test. There is this is easily available and free online. It's 22, maybe 25 questions, and it's a subjective questionnaire. So it's to be answered by the person who is suffering. And I just want to run down some of the questions so that, you know, you can consider this whole picture of addiction and what it is. The first question, and it's going to be narrowly focused on alcohol. Do you feel that you are a normal drinker? Normal would be, do you drink as much or less than most other people? Next, have you ever awakened the morning after some drinking the night before and found that you could not remember part of the evening? That's called blackout. Does any near relative or close friend ever worry or complain about your drinking? Can you stop drinking without difficulty after one or two drinks? The reason that that question is important is because that's the phenomena of craving, which we'll be talking about in a while. It can really kick in after one or two drinks. And I like to say that the on switch works fine and the off switch is broken with people who have alcoholism or drug abuse problem. Do you ever feel guilty about your drinking? Have you ever gone to a 12-step meeting like AA or NA? Have you ever gotten in fights when drinking? Has drinking ever created problems between you and a near relative or a close friend? Has the family member or close friend gone to help about your drinking? Have you lost friends because of drinking? Have you gotten in trouble at work or lost a job because of drinking? Ever neglected your obligations, family, work, for more than 2 days because you were on a bender? Do you ever drink before noon? Have you ever gotten the word that you had any kind of liver problems or that your enzymes were off, which could lead to cirrhosis? Have you ever had DTs? Have you ever gotten help for drinking? Ever been hospitalized for drinking? Or have you ever gone to any kind of counselor for help in which drinking was part of the problem? Then the next question would be, have you gotten more than one DUI, or have you ever been arrested for any other behavior while drinking? So this kind of points to the whole picture. In this test, you would be scored as having no apparent problem, being an early or middle problem drinker, or being a problem drinker. I also, in my practice, like to use the SASE 3. And some of those questions regarding drug abuse would be, do you use to improve your mood, to de-stress, to not think about a problem or pressures? Have you ever gotten really stoned or wiped out on drugs, not just high? Have you ever tried to talk a doctor into giving you some prescription medication? Have you ever mixed alcohol and drugs at the same time? Do you continue to use, or have you ever, because you want to avoid the pain of withdrawal? And have you ever felt that your addiction kept you from getting what you want out of life? Someone who's in denial is going to minimally answer these questions in terms of honesty. And it can be pretty interesting when they take that test after they've gotten into recovery. The scores go way up. So let's look again at what I was talking about, the phenomena of cravings. That is something that we'll talk about for a minute, and then we'll go to break and pick it back up. I want to invite you to call in during the second part of the show. And that number is 866-472-5792. And I want to pose two questions to you. And that would be, have you had some success in overcoming your addiction? As well as, what are some things that you want to hear about on this show? I think I mentioned those earlier, but do you have some specific things that you would like to learn? Give me some feedback, because I've got a few spots open, and I want to give you guys what you're interested in hearing, okay? So, well, let's go ahead and go to break, and then I'll start talking about the phenomenon of cravings, okay?
Please visit Rebecca's website at www.addictioninamerica.com to get more information on today's show, our guests, and other resources. The website contains a bookstore of material by various authors, musicians, and instructional videos to download. Applications for case management, referrals, and intervention can be made through the bookstore as well. Be sure to visit addictioninamerica.com. Addiction in America is here to help you take control of your life. The website again is www.addictioninamerica.com.
Do you feel powerless over what you eat and how much? You're not alone. Find support and hope when you tune into Soundbites from Overeaters Anonymous. Thousands of people just like you face this struggle every day. It's not just those who are overweight or obese, but anyone who has any problem controlling their eating behavior. This program is important to your physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being. Listen every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Tune in to the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
So give me new lights for the day.
You are listening to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Again, that's Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Now, back to the show.
Hello. Thanks for rejoining us. This is Rebecca with Addiction in America. I wanted to talk during the second part about the phenomena of cravings, okay? When I talk to people about whether or not they're experiencing this, they almost always will deny that they have cravings, and I think that the reason is because that is such a strong word. They will say things like, oh, I use it to unwind or de-stress. But when we talk about cravings, there is actually a chemical thing that is happening in the brain there that is causing a person to want to use. I ran across some research recently that said that scientists and medical experts now think of the disease as addiction, of being chronic and relapsing. 80% of addicts who get off drugs or alcohol will go back within a year. And only 20% of those, that would mean achieve a stable abstinence from any given detox within a year. So, you know, what is going on there? That is so important to know. So chronic and relapsing, wow. That means that relapse is part of recovery. It is to be expected. In the stages of change, relapse is the last stage. So it's important to be realistic. So the person that suffers with addiction can easily be compared to, you know, somebody who has hypertension. Hypertension is something that has to be treated with lifestyle changes. And those changes must be maintained in order for blood pressure to stay good, right? So figuring out why somebody relapses is paramount. And this is why in 12-step programs, it's talked about that people should stay away from people, places, and things that will bring that chemical craving about again. So chemical cravings are a physiological manifestation of what's happening in the brain. And this is a strong desire or a hunger for the drugs and or the alcohol. And so what's happening there, not only on a chemical level and combined with the person, you know, situation, is, of course, the choice. The choice to pick up or not is huge, but it's not quite that simple, okay? Craving is a conditioned response. So, you know, the chemicals come out, they're evoked when the person is triggered. One of the things that happens with triggering is that the person is sent into a negative mood state, something like a grief or a death or depression or anxiety. Those type of things are the things that addicts medicate. That's not cunning, baffling, and powerful to think of, okay, I'm medicating emotion. But for somebody who has maintained years of sobriety to relapse at something like 25 years, what happened there? The support from the fellowship of 12-step programs is hugely important because alcoholism is talked about as the loneliness disease in the Living Sober book. And I want to read an excerpt here from As Bill Sees It, The AA Way of Life. This is a great book. Bill W., the founder of AA, has written some great letters in here that are really meaty. So he talks about nothing can be more demoralizing than clinging to an abject dependence on another human being. Somebody can become dependent on others to enable them. And that's what I want to talk about next in terms of intervention. But just to kind of finish up on cravings, let me say that you can look at PET scans. That would be a positron emission tomography test, and see that the brain changes in shape and form with long-term use. The good news for some people is that the brain regenerates itself and it can get back to somewhat normal functioning if a person can stay sober for at least 2 years. However, with things like meth and some other drugs, the brain is going to be forever damaged. So if a person relapses and that relapse is not stopped, the person will easily go back to, because of cravings and because of the brain settings, they'll go back to use patterns from previous years. And that is something that we think of as a progressive disease. So time doesn't matter there. It's what's happening on a chemical level. So one more comment about cravings. Neuropharmacologist Professor George Koob of the Scripps University did an experiment in which he found that rats who were addicted to alcohol, after the alcohol was removed for 3 or 4 days, they would go back and drink 50% more when given that alcohol again. And that, folks, is the phenomenon of craving. Okay, let's talk about intervention. Sooner or later, an intervention happens on everyone that is using. Whether or not they get arrested or some other kind of trouble, financial problems, legal problems, the ultimate intervention is when the alcoholic or addict falls, gets in a car wreck, and dies. These are the kind of crazy things that happen. And let me say that we can't take for granted that the person knows what they're doing, they're just experimenting, they'll get it all together later on. One should never wait to do an intervention, is my opinion. You just don't know what's going to happen to that person. So if you're a loved one who cares about someone and you want to think about doing an intervention, please go ahead and do that, okay? So I'm going to borrow something from an interventionist, David Lee, of Intervention Services. He's got some great stuff on YouTube about why families wait. And I just think this is so poignant. 90% of people intervened on go to treatment. That's a pretty good success rate. But 10% of families who call in to inquire about intervention and who have the financial means to do an intervention actually agree to do it. So what this means is that it's easier to get an unwilling, stubborn alcoholic or addict to go to treatment than it is to get a caring, loving family to agree to do an intervention. What is happening there? That those statistics are accurate. And Keith Fierman, I heard him talk one time at the Interventionist Conference. He said 1 in 10 phone calls that you get actually turns into an intervention. And I found that to be true. And may I say that Keith is not doing interventions directly anymore, but he's working at Cirque Lodge. And I must say, it is easier to get sober in a beautiful place. Cirque Lodge is a beautiful treatment center out in Utah. And that's C-I-R-Q-U-E, Lodge. So talking about what goes on in the family systems that causes intervention to not happen is, again, the phenomena of denial. It is not just the addict, alcoholic, that's in denial, but it's the whole family system. And going down the scale into deeper levels of addiction does not happen all at once. It is progressive. And so it's important for family members and loved ones of addicts and alcoholics to practice detachment, trying to step back, look at the whole picture, be objective. When you operate on your feelings, you are being subjective. And that's where friends and family can be easily manipulated by not what is intentional from the addict, but what is instinctual. The addict wants to maintain not dealing with reality, not seeing reality, and the rest of the family wants to see, get the person to see the whole picture. Well, this is where the power imbalance comes, and this is where the whole system, a family system or a support system around a person, needs to be intervened on. So please don't limit yourself to just looking at the problem as whether or not that person stops using or not. When we're talking about the success of an intervention, success is often narrowly defined as whether or not a person actually goes to treatment. But actually, in a systems viewpoint, the success of an intervention is not only that, whether they go to treatment and get in recovery, but whether or not the family and friends have changed during the process, whether or not they have stopped doing enabling behaviors. And so what happens with families is that they're caught between hope and fear. They want to believe the alcoholic addict that things are going to get better. And they're also fearful that if they intervene with that person, that things will get worse and that it will be their fault. People are used to being attacked as being down on the addict or alcoholic and nagging. And I think that people that are codependent enablers are sensitive to these kind of attacks and are easily manipulated by these kind of attacks and need to detach from that feeling and to get some objectivity about the whole picture, as I've been talking about. Addicts will use heavy amounts of guilt on loving family members to shift the focus away from any kind of consequence or boundary that's being set. and they will even agree at times with how bad off they are. And this gives the family member hope that, okay, they're getting it now. Remember, they can't just quit. It's not just a behavior, because of the phenomena of cravings and because of all the characterological problems, character defects that are in place with the addicted mind. So treatment is where the person unwinds all of that stuff, not just the chemical detox part, but they start to unwind the character defects and the stinking thinking. I have always loved that phrase, stinking thinking. And so what else is also is happening is that families are feeling the pain of addiction for the addict. They absorb all the consequences. They pay the bills. They feel the feelings while the addict is in their bubble. So, you know, family members need to stay tuned in to the whole picture. So, you know, addicts can make people believe that everything is just a series of unfortunate events, and it's one thing after the other. So please don't buy into that picture as each thing that happens is just an isolated event. Try to see the progression of the disease for the family and for the addict. An invitational model of intervention is one in which the family system takes back the power that they've given the addict and says, okay, we're going to look at how addiction has affected our family. We're going to have a meeting about it, and invites the addict to come along and look at what's going on here. And that, I think, is a wonderful model, because it takes the narrow focus off of just quit using or drinking as the only measure of success. And the using and drinking holds all the power when that is the narrow focus. Okay, so we're going to be going to break here in a minute, but I want you to call in 866-472-5792. Give me some feedback on your successes, if you've had any, in kicking your addiction. And again, some feedback on what you want to hear during the course of our 15-week show. And, you know, if you've got any other comments, I will entertain calls. And so let's go ahead and go to break.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go, on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Please visit Rebecca's website at www.addictioninamerica.com to get more information on today's show, our guests, and other resources. The website contains a bookstore of material by various authors, musicians, and instructional videos to download. Applications for case management, referrals, and intervention can be made through the bookstore as well. Be sure to visit addictioninamerica.com. Addiction in America is here to help you take control of your life. The website again is www.addictioninamerica.com.
We all want peace. We all desire a more meaningful life. We work hard to achieve these things, but at what avail? The key is authentic living with Andrea Matthews. Andrea will interview some of the great spiritual experts of today and will provide wisdom to help you raise your consciousness to the level of your own I Am. Your authenticity can give you miraculous gifts, but you have to know how to get there. Listen for Authentic Living with Andrea Matthews. Heard live every Wednesday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Seventh Wave Network.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Again, that's Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, Hey, I'm Rebecca Bullion, and you're listening to Addiction in America. Thanks so much for tuning back in. I've got a caller on the line, and that would be Keith Fierman. Hey, Keith, how are you doing?
I am great, Rebecca. How are you?
Doing fine. Well, I know I gave you guys a plug a little earlier to say that it's easy to get beautifully recovered in a place like Utah. I visited your treatment center last January or so, and let me say I was so impressed. And I understand that you're working for CERC now and like 100% working for them and not doing intervention. Is that true?
That is correct. I get asked that a lot. A couple of reasons that I completely 100% retired. One is, you know, especially the last 10 or more years, I was 200 to 250 nights a year on the road doing intervention. So very blessed to be so busy, but also, I knew that I wanted to retire out and help with the center. The other piece is I felt if I did any interventions, people might feel like, oh, he's doing them for CERC Lodge. And I didn't want that to come across at all. I'm such a believer in interventions that, and I'm director of family support for CERC Lodge. So my first question always is trying to get a family to, engage with an interventionist. And a lot of them are very shocked because they're saying, well, Joe's willing to go. And like I heard you talk earlier, you know, the family system part is so important that I always say at CERC Lodge, listen, to a family, I'll say, if you'll hire an interventionist, whatever you pay that interventionist, I'll take off the price. That's how important I believe having an interventionist on your side is. I'm also working with NATAP, National Association of Addiction Treatment Centers, to try to make that more of the standard, that if treatment centers would say, hey, if you would engage, retain an interventionist, even if it's just as, you know, someone to bounce off some, you know, a neutral party, as it were, to help defray that cost. So, you know, I know the benefit of doing this for years and years of having an interventionist on your side, on a treatment center side, on a family side, on the identified patient side. It's a win-win-win.
What would you suggest for families who can't afford the standard intervention? What do you advise them to do?
Well, I would first advise them to call either or look up either the Association of Intervention Specialists. And you know, there's a couple of intervention, quote, membership groups out there. And there are a lot of interventionists that have great sliding scales. Most interventionists will do, I say this most, a lot of interventions will do a few, you know, service work interventions a year. But most interventionists that I know, and I'll speak for myself, I used to say 90% of my calls were families that certainly couldn't afford anything, but I would give them the time to kind of walk them through what the difference of an intervention is and just confronting someone is, you know, and how to keep it on yourselves in a healthy, loving manner. And sometimes, you know, that's all that can be done, sadly.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got a lot of years of experience. Do you find that, do you would do follow-up with families? What kind of success rate do you find, with a person using an intervention versus just going to treatment?
Can I have about 30 seconds to answer that?
Yes.
Okay,
absolutely.
Good. I have no clue. There's the short answer. I tried my whole career. Just like, you know, Betty Ford Center went through a period of a number of years where they had 6 full-time employees, but their focus was follow-up, finding out what, you know, what is success rate. And they finally looked at it just like I looked at it, like, how accurate is this when I called Jenny's family in Chicago? And they'd say, oh, we think Jenny's fine. Or I call Jenny herself. And she says, you know, is that accurate? Do I know, you know, how real is that? We know from doctors and airline pilots because we monitor them for 5 years. You know, they're weekly tested or they go into meetings or they're seeing their therapist and all of that. But the general public. But on the other side of that, I was able to track my entire career of interventions on how many accepted treatment. Now, that means did they go day one, or do they go, you know, 10 days after or 3 months after? And, you know, and that was all I could track. Did they stay in treatment? They complete? I'm not sure. But through my whole career, it was right at 97%, which is a very high figure. And people think, you know, because most people call thinking, there's no way Uncle Joe's going to treatment. And I could say, well, you know, statistically, most any interventionist is running around 95% and about 85% day one, and meaning the other leading up to 95-97% might, if the family holds their truths and boundaries and changes their dance, most everyone accepts.
So there's
my long answer.
Well, that's a good answer. I mean, that's a great success rate for getting people to go. What do you say when the family system gets narrowly focused on what you just commented on, they are not going to go? What do you say to the family system in response?
Well, it depends on exactly how they I generally start with saying, you must have some tiny bit of hope or you wouldn't be calling me. Often it's after a, you know, certainly something major has happened, you know, that, you know, my husband's been drinking for 40 years, but, you know, here it is, 3 a.m. is when you decide to do an intervention. Yeah, so I have to back them out of that. But I say, I really take the time, which I don't want to eat up on your show because you're doing it, and that's explaining that I can only promise you that things are going to be better out of this. If there's 6 of you worried, and you're including Jill as number 7. I said, I can assure you 6 of 7 are going to have a better lifestyle if you'll listen to me. And we have and if we look at Jill going to treatment as a side effect, you're gonna find that this process is beautiful.
Yes, yes. It's always so sad too when you get that call, oh, I want to do an intervention, and then maybe, you know, I had one a month or so ago. The guy called 2 days later and said, well, my friend died.
Oh, yeah, well.
Just got there too late.
Yeah, we've always had those horror stories.
Yeah,
you know,
that's why I say don't wait to do an intervention, right? Don't wait till
it. Here was my pat answer. My pat answer was, as a professional, a licensed clinician, I'm not going to go on record saying, wait, I can't do that. You know, God forbid you wait and then something happens. On the other side of the coin is, are our odds of getting him or her help better if we do this, you know, in a professional, healthy, timely manner rather than trying to, you know, not get family prepared? And the answer I would say is yes. The odds of us getting them to accept and you to understand better the disease of addiction, you know, it's going to be, let's do it in a healthy, proper way. Not just, again, you know, someone calls at 3 a.m, you know, be over at my house to talk to Jill in the morning. Well, I'm not going to do that. You know, that's a 911 call. That's not an interventionist call.
Right, and I've found that a lot of times people, when they're in that state, they want to do it this weekend or next weekend, and it's hard to kind of get their head around the whole picture, and the preparation phase is so important to success, I think. Do you agree?
Right. Oh, very much. But at the same time, I was able in my career to many times get to a family quick, you know, especially if the players of an intervention, which of course that's such a huge part in my book, were, you know, could be arranged to get there and where we could meet. And I know you spoke of systemic, which I like to do kind of a modified systemic. I always, you know, whether it be invitational or not, I always personally love to at least have one meeting with the family prior to the identified patient, just to know what I'm walking into. And a lot of that reason was because it's such a genetic illness that there's usually someone in recovery. And I've got to make sure that person in recovery understands the difference in an intervention and a 12-step call, which you can talk about that over your next few weeks. because I know the identified patient's going to say, well, Uncle Joe, you went to treatment. I mean, you went to, you know, to an AA meeting, the bottom of the basement in 1942 and got sober. And and that's the truth. And can someone do that? Yeah. So
yeah.
Did I have time to prep Uncle Joe to say, I sure did, but God, would it not have been so much easier to be able to get some medical help, some support?
Right, right.
You know, whereas if I hadn't had that meeting with him beforehand, he might not know how to answer that in a healthy way.
Okay. Well, Keith, can we just hear just a little bit about CIRC and what makes CIRC like a great place to go?
Well, obviously, I'm prejudiced. I will say this. I'm the site chair of the Board of Interventionists still. As crazy as that is, I still, you know, sit on that board position. So I've been to over 400 treatment centers. And when I retired, I noticed two things. One, that not only, even though I probably had more patients in treatment centers all over the country, I was finding not just successes very good at CIRC, but people coming out talking about a lot of joy. So Here's, if I had to give you the biggest thing, you know, we do a lot of experiential. Every day, every single day, people are doing something with their therapist. They're either going hiking, skiing, equine, you know, rafting with a therapist. So they're not just sitting in a classroom all day. We do that as well. You know, they have individual, we have full dual diagnosis, psychiatry, all that. But the difference, and a lot of people say, oh, because you're in the mountains of Sundance and all. Yeah, I think that helps with the spirituality piece. But at the end of the day, it's the people. And I think we have great people and people who love what they do and realize, you know, how insidious addiction is. And we want to treat everyone with complete respect. In other words, very non-punitive. We don't believe, and I don't believe, in getting the face of someone. You know, if they have cancer, the doctor's not going to get in their face either. But the doctor's going to say, if you don't follow this, you're probably not going to get better. But if you do, you have a very good chance of getting better.
Right. Hey, Keith, we got to go to break. I want you to stay on the line, but I will entertain other calls during the next segment. But this is Rebecca Bullion. You're listening to Addiction in America, and let's go to break.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
Please visit Rebecca's website at www.addictioninamerica.com to get more information on today's show, our guests, and other resources. The website contains a bookstore of material by various authors, musicians, and instructional videos to download. Applications for case management, referrals, and intervention can be made through the bookstore as well. Be sure to visit addictioninamerica.com. Addiction in America is here to help you take control of your life. The website again is www.addictioninamerica.com.
Are you living your vital life? One that is showcasing you at your full potential? There are many issues that stand in the way of most people achieving their full potential. We will discuss these issues and how to overcome them each week on The Vital Life, Awakening Your Full Potential, with host Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross. Living the vital life often requires that we trust our own intuitive voice and that we view illness or life challenges as calls to action to reconnect with the deeper urges of our spirit or soul. Tune in Fridays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Again, that's Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, well, thanks for tuning back in after the break. This is Rebecca with Addiction in America. And I'm still on the line with Keith Bierman of CIRC Lodge, and it was such a good conversation. I wanted to kind of keep it going. And I wanted to ask you, Keith, What are the differences in treatment using these holistic methods and experiential methods versus doing just a traditional 12-step focus? What are the benefits of the holistic methods?
Well, we believe, and we are certainly, we're definitely a 12-step based program. So people are, while people are at Surf Lodge, they're even getting a temporary sponsor just to understand that piece of it. But I think the big differences are we look at it as we have you for a short time, be that 30, 60, 90 days. And you've got hopefully a lifetime of, quote, recovery ahead of you, meetings and such. So within that scope, we therapeutically want to try to get as stable and as deep as we can. And what I mean by as deep as we can, we don't want to take someone deeper than they can go in early recovery. So we are planting the seeds of certainly mind, body, spirit with all of our experiential, but we're also doing a lot of education around addiction. We want people, we feel the more they're educated, the less they're going to be shameful. And easier to break denial when, you know, when they get gut level honest and can remember, I really didn't want to pick that drink up. Why did I? When I knew I have a chance of losing my children. So it's sort of, you know, I feel like we're deeply holistic, but at the same time, we're very 12 step. I mean, so I know there are centers out there that are only 12 step. And so I know of many a friend that's sober through that. And I know some that, that don't use 12-step, and I'm not one of those that's on the soapbox think, you know, you have to have 12-step. I can't imagine why you wouldn't want to add it in just to have a support team, but, you know, that's my opinion.
You know, I am an EMDR therapist, and in EMDR and in trauma work, we say that the past is the present, and I think that's why it's important to be in treatment for a piece of time so that you can try to go as deep as you can to dig into that trauma as some of the roots of addiction. But it's not the whole picture. Of course, there is the genetic piece as well. But to kind of maintain that dual awareness of present focus as well as past focus, because the word triggering is so important. A person can be so easily triggered because of their trauma that causes them to want to medicate. And so that's the benefit I see too of some of the holistic methods, is to try to get into some of that past stuff. And I really was impressed with Cirque's equine program. You can learn so much from horses. I had no idea.
I was shocked myself. I actually did my first time I ever did it. I went in with a very, cynical attitude probably. Cirque wasn't even open at the time. This is years and years ago at Sierra Tucson, and that day was life-changing for me. Just a couple of little things. So, yeah, it really is important. You know, we're such a big believer in when someone's discharging that certainly we suggest the 90 and 90, but we're always trying to set up a therapist because we do believe in having someone there to help, that your AA group and sponsor's not there to do the deeper work and someone to contain that. And I remember in my own journey, a sponsor / therapist said, we're going to wait a couple of years, and then we're going to, you know, I think you need to do something like an on-site program, which is just short, like 4 to 5 days where you go really deep. But, you know, at the time he said, you need to focus on your recovery and just, you know, hang on, do everything you can, then we'll go deeper. And that was my story, and it worked well. At the same time, we've had people so shattered that we've gotten into a more intensive, you know, place for maybe a week or two, and then bring them back to where we can kind of put the pieces of the puzzle back together.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, that intensive thing is intense. And when somebody's newly recovered, you know, getting into the process, you don't want to overload them by looking at too much too soon. That always seems to scare people off, doing too much too soon.
But if you can look at those traumas and see that they are just traumas. That was the past, and we're moving towards the future, and take a breath, because they themselves can't do anything to you really, but trigger you. And then what you do with that trigger is what we're trying to teach you.
Right. And I do think of those feeling states that are created with trauma as being, for some folks, just so crippling. And it, you know, it's interesting in the therapy world. If somebody had cancer or, you know, if they're a diabetic, they would take a different attitude toward their health than some people do their emotional health. I think of emotions as being something like oxygen or gravity. It's hard to, you know, put form to it because it's not so concrete as I give myself a shot or I go to, you know, my treatments for cancer. But it's important that people take it just as seriously as if it were some sort of medical issue like that. And I tell my clients sometimes, when it and, you know, we're talking about the intensives and taking the time to do the therapy, and I say, listen, if you had a brain tumor, you wouldn't go in there and tell your brain surgeon to just open you up and close you up and do the work is, you know, within an hour. It's just not possible.
Right. So I use that analogy so often in my intervention work.
Maybe I got that from you.
Well, I just say this. I mean, I actually even keep my website up just because a large part when I came to CERC, I said, here's a big part of what I want to do. And the owner really got it. And so did Gary, you know, Gary Fisher. I said, we're going to get a lot of calls that people need help that CERC's not the right fit either geographically, monetarily. However, we bend over backwards to scholarship. If we have openings, we'll pretty much get anybody in. And that's been a big part of what I do is getting people to understand addiction a little bit, to understand why they need the interventionist, and then also to help say where the right place might be for not just the person, you know, the identified patient, but when I hear the frantic mother that's just waking up, thinking about her son, going to sleep, going, you know, those over-the-top codependents that are even going out buying the drugs for the son so they don't have to go to the bad part of town that, and getting that commitment that they will go do some work at a treatment center, some family work.
Yes, the family piece is so important because, you know, I think with the narrow focus of, okay, they just need to quit using, that is just too narrow because it is a systemic problem so much of the time. Was it you that made the joke one time? It's a rare call that you get when the addict or alcoholic calls for the intervention.
Yeah, I mean, I had two in my whole career, and they were both beautiful. So that's a very minimal thing. And they understood enough that if they had an intervention on themselves, they're going to hear that their family is going to hear from a professional what's going on, how this is working in the brain, why they're doing what they're doing, and why they're asking for help. And you know, it's usually, I hope this comes out politically correct, but it's usually because some of the family members are the type members that have the attitude of, you just pull your bootstraps up and everything will be good. And they can't quite understand it. And I usually have my little ways of talking about just brain chemistry, that if someone had Parkinson's and their hand was shaking, you know, would you tell them to pull their bootstraps up?
Because, yes, you know, very poignant, yes.
When you've got an addiction and it's working out of the part of the brain, that amygdala that's out of their control, it's the same thing. And I can usually do that.
We have about 2 minutes to close of the show,
okay.
So we need to be wrapping it up. But go ahead and say what you were going to say.
Well, I was just going to say, as far as I used a healthy bait and switch often to get people, to family members, to get their own health, and that was, I would say, listen, when we do talk to Jill, Joe, Jimmy, whoever it is, if you're willing to say that this is affecting me so much that I'm going to go do some work myself, and husband and son and wife, and the identified patient's hearing that, hey, everyone else is going to go off and do some work for themselves, it's much easier for them to do it. And if I tell them that, even though they don't really want to go do that work, but the bait and switch part is when I say, hey, it'll help them say yes, then they're willing to do it.
That's great. That's great. Keith, I thank you so much for calling in. This has been so helpful and informative. And I hope that listeners are really going to think about intervention and think about the whole picture. And so I guess we're going to go ahead and close and say that this is Rebecca with Addiction in America. And I have enjoyed doing the show today and look forward to next week when we'll have Burr Cook talk more about intervention. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Addiction in America. Please join Rebecca Bullion again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time, and 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Until our next program, have a good week, and may you be one step closer to conquering your addiction.
I'm having a hard time just trying to understand all the suffering, the misery that man goes through.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.